Hi, everybody. I have a special show this evening. It's a show of empowerment. And if you've ever done any research on Jerry Wills, you'll know what I'm talking about. He has a unique upbringing, but also more importantly, he's dedicated his life to empowering people. And I just think that is so special. So I'm going to bring him on so you guys can all meet Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have so many questions for you. Can I get going?
I'll try to. Yeah, of course. Go right ahead. I'll do my best.
Just a little bit, just a tiny bit of your beginnings, just so everybody knows, and then they can go research more on YouTube.
Yeah, of course. Well, the beginnings are not something that I can validate. They're things that I remember and pieces of the puzzle that I've been able to put together. I'm 60 years old, and I've been looking into this for quite some time, as you might imagine. And there have been a lot of different things that have happened that have led me to have come forward and to talk about who I am and what my origins are. The story begins really with a small baby in a farmhouse somewhere in Kentucky and the Army Air Corps coming to retrieve this child, going back to taking the child back to the hospital at Fort Knox, and that's where the baby was me, and that's where I stayed until I was handed off to a husband and wife who could not have children. And these pieces that I've just told you have come together in various ways over the years. I know it sounds maybe hard to believe. Of course it is. But the pieces that I've been able to assemble from all of this in order to validate it to myself, because really that's where the most important point of validation is going to occur. Proving it to someone else, I don't really care if anyone believes it or not. But the point is that I need to know if there's some reality to this. And so I've looked and looked. And what I've come to find out, over the years I've run into people who were part of that recovery team who gave me their version of the story. When I was, 38 years old, I think. And, of course, I'd had visitations and encounters with extraterrestrials from a very early age. And at this particular encounter, they came to me where I was living in Phoenix, showed up one night, and said that they had some information. It was time for a conversation. I listened, and the fellow told me that my mother was going to die and that I was going to be provided some information that could have an emotional, be somewhat of an emotional trauma for me. They wanted to make sure that I would be all right with the information. Well, I was never that close to my mother. My father died when I was 7. And all this time, I thought that that was really my mother and that was really my father. I had no idea. They told me that I had been adopted and gave me the salient details of all of that and said that when she dies, this was my opportunity to go see her before she dies, of course, and before or after she were to pass away, that this information would be, that I would hear some details about this. Well, It was a bit of a startling thing to hear, but at 38 years old, and I wasn't really that close, and I was never anything like them. So it sort of made sense, and it started making a lot more sense. Well, sure enough, as predicted, she passed away, and my sister, because there were two girls in the family as well, and now we know, or at least how could we not know, that they are also adopted. And my one sister overheard some men talking they wanted to know if I had ever been told the story. And my stepfather, who was there, he says, no, she never wanted him to know anything about that. And so they were talking further. Well, she overheard this about me being adopted, and she called and told me, which really floored me, because now here was the first time I'd heard from anyone, aside from extraterrestrials, that I was adopted. And from that point, I started looking into this much more deeply. One of the points of contention with my birth record is that there is really hardly any information at all on the birth certificate. It's not like anyone else's, you know, where there's all this information filled out, footprints and that sort of thing. There's nothing like that at all. It's just almost a blank piece of paper with just a few sketchy comments and very few details, mother's name and so forth, and that's it. So, you know, in regards to my origins, the things that I've come to know, both from those encounters when I was younger, because that was happening from 5 years old, really, until I was 18. And it took a break for about 10 years, and then it started up again at 28, and then 38, and at various other times in my life. And all during those times, it was, now I see, always insinuated that they had a reason for having come to speak with me and spend so much time with me over all those years. So is it real? Is it true? I don't know. You know, I really can't offer any particular item as a point to say, yeah, this is an absolutely true statement or a true story. But it's what I believe about myself. And I didn't really feel comfortable coming forward with this information for quite some time. I would tell close friends, family members, and not very many of them. But there was an incident in New York. I was working in New York as a healer. And I work all over the world doing this. I have, from an early age, I've had a rather, well, some would say it's profound ability. Hearing people talking, knowing what the future is, just, you know, stuff like that. And also being able to look inside of a person's body and sometimes changing things so that whatever's hurting them no longer is causing them an issue. And this can be a broken bone to, you know, cancer or arthritis or, you know, any of these things that afflict people these days. Being able to see what the cause is and so forth. And it's all been documented. It isn't just me saying it. Hospitals have documented it. Researchers, doctors. There's a long list of documentation on all of this. Well, while in New York, I was approached by some of these folks that was there. They were there at the same place. It was a house. And in this house, they would have different psychics of different abilities and types who would come through there offering lectures and workshops and also to provide their services to the clientele that would come through this place. And, you know, in the off times, we would sit around and talk and visit and laugh and have a great time. And one afternoon, two or three of them were really good friends, very trusted friends. You know, we're all talking about it, and they all knew what I felt about myself. They'd picked up on it and asked me about it. And they said, why don't you tell the world your story? I said, well, because I don't think anyone's really ready to hear such a thing. I mean, after all, it's on the surface, it's quite far-fetched. And they said, no. And they all agreed that it was time for me to let the world know who I am. Well, I had faith in them, and at the time it seemed like it was a fine idea, I suppose. So, we already, Kathy and I, Kathy's my wife, we had already set up Expeditions TV, had broadcast abilities. We could do all sorts of things, getting the word out to people. So I set up a special broadcast, and I did a live broadcast from this place and broadcast it out to the world. I had about a 90-minute lecture that I provided. Normally, people would come through this place. There would be 20 or 30 at a time. And that was on weekends. During the week, you might get 15 or 20. But for this, when it was announced what I was going to do, the place was completely filled and packed with people. Cameras were set up. Everything was set to go. And, of course, Kathy, behind the camera, she's really good at that. We pushed the broadcast button, and I started. Well, it went out to people all over the world. And I expected that there would be some backlash, that there would be hate mail and degrading statements and derogatory things that might be said. But instead, what happened was we received hundreds, maybe thousands of messages from people all over the world who said they felt the same way about themselves, that they appreciated it so much that I had come forward and had the courage to come forward and talk about this. There wasn't one email or message or phone call that came through from anywhere on earth that was a negative comment. So I was really surprised by that. We were used to negative comments, and the reason is really because we look for lost cities in very remote places, and we're trying to find evidence of a different version of the history of the earth. And sometimes we bring things forward, speculating on what it might be. And, of course, there are always those who will come up and try to slam it back down, and I figure they're just trolls that don't want the truth to be known, because some of these things is impossible to argue about. So we'd gotten hate mail before, and we didn't get any with this. And really, since that time, and it's been several years, I'm sure there have been things that were said that I am not aware of, but I've not had anything from anyone that even suggests that there's anything wrong with what I've done. And I felt comfortable doing it because my track record as far as being a healer, people are always asking me, how is it you can do what you do? It's just unexplainable. And I just tell them there are worlds where this is not an unusual feature in the human condition. It's part of being alive. So, having come forward and talked about my origins, it suddenly explained why I was able to do what I do in a little bit different but somewhat comprehensive way. And, of course, you know, folks are still wondering, how do I do it? They still want to know, how can they do it? So my mission has been, from the inception of all of this, even years and years ago, decades ago, to help others understand how these things happen, how you can develop your psychic abilities. And I have wanted to empower others so that they would have some confidence and be able to do these things themselves. My philosophy is that we have lived long enough without a sense of confidence and without a sense of our own abilities or a sense of who we really are. We are the product from deep within us outward, the product of conditioning and what others have formed us into being so that we would fit into a rational example that's understood by everyone at a very basic level. I think that we're a lot more than that. At the basic level, at the very deepest point of ourselves, we are something truly spectacular, wondrous, and great, that we have incredible abilities, our capacity to do something really good is infinite. But in order to find that empowerment, we need to understand who we are first, the true nature of our existence, not the one that has been handed to us and we were given in order to fit into a nice square cubicle. We're much more than that. So I've been trying to empower others and show them how they can find their own strengths. Sometimes it's by exposing their weaknesses, but it is always toward the concept that there's something greater, something more beautiful, something more possible that exists just beyond what you know. And empowering others seems to be a fun thing and a great way to bring those changes to the table so that we can all enjoy being, you know, confident beings who realize the true nature of our existence. Sorry, getting a little long-winded, I suppose.
Well, this show is built, and I do it to help the contactees because we all need to get together and compare stories. And I like to analyze. I analyze companies, and what I started doing is analyzing contactees, the way that they interpret information and how they conducted their life. And what's incredible with you and what you're exhibiting is that here you've taken a higher frequency baby and put it into this lower density and raised with the belief systems of this little cubicle environment of this 3D life, and yet you still broke through. And I think that is so important, and that it's inspiring for other people to do it as well, to find their own courage to dig within and give themselves permission to be the best that they can be, no matter what other people say. It should be okay.
Yeah, well, I agree with you completely. One of the things that I was told by these folks that I had frequent visits from is that I wasn't the only one. I wasn't the unique case. Instead, I was one of quite a number of children who were brought here in order to live here and grow here and experience this world. The idea was that basically when you're trying to, well, I wouldn't say trying to, when your intention is to do something good, let's say that we wanted to do something good for a lost tribe in the Amazon. Well, if we had their technology, what we could do is we could have a baby show up, boom, there's the baby. And it's like, oh, well, that's pretty interesting. Looks a little different than us, but not that much. The baby grows up. And the idea behind having brought the children here, or even in this example, having taken a child there in this far-fetched example, is that the child is growing up and it's getting some information periodically from where it came from. It also has a much different reasoning capacity, a different intellect, and different properties, the psychic abilities, for example. There comes a point where maybe these people are time travelers. I don't know. I don't know what their end goal is completely. But as I understand it, it was to help to guide this world by empowering people individually being an example and helping others to find their powers within themselves. Apparently, they tried to do this in the past, and in those times and in the distant past, when they would try to do something of this nature, it really went far out of hand. The messenger became more important than the message. And when that happens, then it, at least in some cultures, it deifies the messenger, and others it demonizes them. But it changes the entire intent. So in this particular example, apparently there is something that's just ahead for the people of this world. And I believe it's something very good. You know, there's a lot of people talking about all the negative things that can happen, and, you know, you hear about it constantly. It's all this bad stuff, all these frightening things. Well, and left unattended, perhaps, that could be the case. But they seem to have felt that there was a reason to put these individuals, myself included, into this world so that we might have some slight influence on how, in the midst of all the smoke and fire, in the midst of the anxiety, that there was also a voice that would say, it doesn't have to be this way, you know. It can be better, and I'll show you how. And whether that's in a spiritual respect or technological or fill in the blanks, I think that the people who came here have a wide variety of talents and reasons for being here. And if you take a look around at some of the things that have happened in the past 50 years, some of the movements that have taken place, maybe Greenpeace, there are people very interested in saving the dolphins, saving the ocean, saving the trees, saving the planet, looking out for our better interests when it comes to food or water or the air we breathe, activists of all sorts. Well, I don't know, but could they have possibly been influenced so that their small voice would be listened to and a larger number of voices would be added to theirs because they had a salient thing to speak about, something that was poignant and important. So I'm just perhaps rationalizing, guessing, but
no, I think that's important. Because it allows everybody that has a passion about something to realize that they're contributing in a big way, that this is all by design, and whatever their contribution is, it's huge when you put it all together for all of us working towards the same mission. Tell me, can we experience this with you? When you meet the Tau Ceti's, what do they look like, or what is their mannerisms, or what
well,
do you get?
Well, they're not specifically only from Tau Ceti. They're from a variety of other worlds out there. But when in my experience, when I would meet up with them, it would happen under a variety of different circumstances, whether it would be just a knowing that it was time to get up and go out of the house and go down into the woods and walk a quarter mile to meet up with them somewhere at the end of a large hay field, you know, somewhere in Kentucky, or just waking up and knowing that they were present, either going outside or waiting because they would come inside. Irrespective of how it would happen, there would be this knowing that it was going to take place. After that, what they look like us. By and large, it would be very difficult to look at them and look at anyone walking on the street in any of the large cities of the world, even small towns, because I saw them walking, you know, on the street in the town that was nearby where I grew up. They don't look any different than us. You put them in the same clothes we wear, they look just like us. What makes them look different is when they wear what they normally wear. But there are those that don't look like us as well. And you don't see them walking the streets. An example of that is a type that's about, well, they vary in height because they're not carbon copies of each other, as most beings aren't. There's this individual aspect. But they're somewhere between 5 and 6 feet tall. They have a bluish-white cast to their skin. And they look a lot like the ETs that you see on the cover of Whitley Strieber's book, with the big eyes and so forth. But they're not gray. They don't really speak, but they're very powerful telepathically. They make a rather uncanny sound if they try to make a sound at all. But that's one other type. And then there's a third type. and what they look like the ones on Whitley Strieber's book. They're short, maybe 3 foot tall. Not very tall at all. Their heads are disproportionate to their bodies. I don't know how their necks would work because they're so small. They have 4 fingers, and they are kind of gray looking. They have the big buggy eyes. There's a third group that look, well, they look pretty weird. They're about a little taller than the grays, you know, maybe 3.5-4 feet tall, and they're just covered in black hair. They have teeth like a cat, for example. They just look very, I don't like them at all. And there are others. There's all kinds of people out there in the cosmos. It isn't one particular body type or another. All these different people, they evolved or evolved themselves towards whatever their needs were in order to do whatever they were doing. I mean, there are some that are quite tall and very ambiguous. They don't seem to care one way or the other. Some of them have intentions that are against the betterment of this world, and others seem to be, well, they are benevolent. The thing about the ones who look like humans is that their reasoning for even being here is that the people of this world, as I've been told, and again, there's no way to prove it, are here because they were brought here, not because they evolved here. They're just a part, an extension of themselves. In other words, the people here are an extension of those who come from other worlds. Humans look like humans. I met in South America, for example, at first it was one fellow. He said he was from the Pleiades. And, of course, I rolled my eyes and said, uh-huh, sure. This was during the time when Barbara Marciniak wrote her book. And, you know, when someone writes a book like this, back in the late 80s, early 90s, suddenly everybody's from the Pleiades. Well, he says he's from the Pleiades. I'm like, okay, whatever. Well, he, of course, went on to illustrate very clearly that he wasn't from this world. Whether he's from the Pleiades or not, I'm in no position to debate that with him. I just accepted it. And I met others like himself. There was a whole group of them. You know, when someone gets out of a UFO, out of a flying saucer, and tells you something, you don't have to necessarily believe it, but past a certain point, if they give you enough information, you're kind of inclined to think, well, I mean, they told me the truth about these nine things, so I suppose that this thing about them being from Pleiades must be reasonably acceptable. But they look just like us as well, except, you know, slight differences. Just very, very slight differences. A good example of that would be the color of their eyes. I've never seen eyes so clear. The blue eyes were like aquamarine. It was just very, very odd. But there was a man who looked very Asian. A tall black man. A couple of women. One looked rather Italian, I suppose, if I was going to classify it as in a country setting. The other one looked very American. And they were all very powerful telepathically. There weren't any secrets, and there was no need to talk. So, of course, you know, you'd be inclined to believe them if they tell you where they're from and give you enough detail. But the people look like people, typically. They are just different because of where they're from. Just as much as, you know, a person from the East Coast versus a person from the Deep South. And then you take a look at someone in Japan. We're all people. We just look different. And that's how it is out there as well. That's been my experience.
Have you had much experience with the ships, seen the different types of ships, and have you been on a ship?
I have seen quite a few different types. I'm sure there are quite a few I've not seen as well. I mean, the most common thing is like a flying saucer, you know, really. There's one that I call the Bell Ship. It kind of looked like an acorn, not exactly, but like an acorn, you know, with the cap down and pointy part up. I only saw that twice, and it usually only held two people. The discs, they were, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but probably 30, 40 foot across and maybe, oh, perhaps 18, 20 foot at the center. I had no way of measuring it. I really wasn't thinking about measuring it at the time, but just reflecting back, it's about the size I would give it. saw one once that was, I'm sure it must have been 1,000 foot long. It was just gigantic. Just the biggest thing. It was just amazing to see. And of course, a variety of lights, you know, things glowing and that sort of thing, which was a bit, it's vague and ambiguous. You really can't say, oh, well, that looks like this or that. It just looked like something glowing. The ones that the Pleiadians were in, one of the reasons I believed them is because it looked a lot like the one of the pictures from a Billy Meyer series. It just looks like a flying saucer. And it was very distinctively like the one that I saw a picture of. So it's like, well, that is a little bit of validation, I suppose, it was for me. But, you know, there's been even large, circular, gaseous-looking craft. And I don't know what that was all about, but it was just a big ball that had somewhat well-defined edges as you're looking at it, but it was almost transparent and plasma-like. No idea what that was. Have I been inside? I have, on a couple of occasions. And it was really not that, you know, I have always been a big fan of Star Trek. Any kind of science fiction, I love that stuff. And, you know, you imagine walking into something like this, there's lights flashing and, you know, all these things going on. It was about as uneventful as sitting in a Cadillac. It really was. It wasn't like there was some, you know, big deal about it. You walk in, You walk into a large circular room, and there are windows that either you can see out of or you can't, and it looks like a wall when you can't see out of it. It's not like the windows open and close. Some chairs sit around for people to sit in, of course. But nothing that was really extraordinary to, you know, to really be that excited about. It wasn't that big of a deal.
When you were in space, does it sound like water at all? Do you hear any bubbling noises, or can you recall?
No, I don't remember anything like that.
No, okay.
The one time this thing took off with me in it, I was really concerned I was going to get in trouble because I was supposed to be on a hike, you know, just walk out in the woods and then come back. And, you know, this thing, they say, we want you to watch. So I'm looking, and it looks like I'm watching a TV, except it's quite large and it's a window. There was really no sense of movement whatsoever, not even a little. But everything just pulled away very, very rapidly. Then there were clouds, then clouds pulled away, and there was a curvature of the earth, then it got smaller, and there was, you know, the edge of the earth, and then it turned, and there was the moon. So there was no sense. It could have been like watching a movie for all I know. I mean, there was no evidence that I had really left anywhere. It was like being on a Disney ride, except there was no sensation of movement. It's like watching TV in a strange environment of this this somewhat circular room and these folks there that were very casually sitting, paying attention to what they were doing.
Do you notice when you're working with various people with the psychic ability that some are more in tune with some things and then some just can't get it? And no matter how much they pray or burn candles, they can't get it. Have you noticed that?
Oh, I've run into that. Yeah, of course. And, you know, those are the ones I try to work with so that they can. Because usually when a person can't get it, it's the result of their focus, their perspective on whatever it is they're trying to, quote-unquote, get. And I found that by shifting your focus and seeing things from a different perspective, that it opens resources. If you can get to a point where you ask yourself why, then it compels the mind to do something about that vacuum. Knowledge usually satisfies that. In most cases, knowledge is enough. But for some, they want to go farther than just have a question answered. Knowledge isn't. And that's where experience is necessary. Some people want to be great musicians, painters, healers, psychics, whatever. And they'll really work hard at it, but they keep running into walls. They reach a plateau, and it's as far as they can go, perhaps. Helping them to get a different perspective changes all of that. To be very, very good at anything that you're wanting to succeed at, it requires confidence, but it also requires some wisdom. And so in my way of thinking, the equation for getting to where you want to be is this: knowledge plus experience equals wisdom. And it just continually feeds upon itself as an equation, because the more knowledge you get, the more you want to have more experiences. More experiences, more knowledge, more wisdom. And I think that's one of the main reasons you can't really give anyone wisdom. They have to acquire it through their experiences as they increase what they know. And in the folks that I've taught and the things that I've shown, it's opened a few doors to the people that usually found that they had reached a point where they could go no farther. And like I said, it's about empowerment. And being able to help a person find that doesn't make me a good teacher. It just means that they're a good student. They ask themselves a question and sought out the answer.
I want to go into healing, because I'm being led as an intuitive. I'm an intuitive healer too, and the psychic ability seems to be opening me up for the healing. And it was funny because when I went to your website, I noticed you had a page or a big section for iodine. And that's what I'm into as well, is I'm finding that iodine. So we had that in common. Plus, you also were attracted to Tesla and quantum physics and quantum health. So can you tell me what drew you to that? What were you looking for? And what did you find that would pertain to health?
Well, about iodine, it's something that it's just knowledge that I acquired. It wasn't something that I was desperately seeking out answers for. There's a fellow, his name is Dr. Jorge Fletches. And this man is one of the world's leading authorities on using iodine as a health benefit. The more I found out about it, the more I wanted to know. I eventually had an interview with him, because I have a radio show as well. And this interview, it opened a lot of doors for me. It really filled in a lot of gaps. And what I found out about iodine was like, aha, this is something I've been missing all along. In regards to Tesla, well, Tesla, of course, phenomenal. Just a phenomenal person. I wish I had the opportunity to have met him. I believe that he was inspired. Maybe he was brought here as well. I don't know. But what he knew is far beyond what a lot of folks have any ability to comprehend. He broke it down into more easily understandable ways and tried to bring good things to people to empower them. In regards to the quantum healing aspect, which is a dandy term, I almost coined that and then someone beat me to it. Because I've never really been able to figure out what to call what I do. I just say I'm fixing people. It isn't as flashy as quantum healing, but anyway, that is really a byproduct of my experience with the extraterrestrials. They taught me a great deal, you know, about what they do and how they do it. They have a technological aspect to this as well. It involves light, sound, presence. And the use of this energy that we are all made of is something they do, you know, all the time. And apparently it's something that's built into me as well. And so they were very keen to show me how to do this sort of thing and how to develop this, you know, further this technique. When I was younger, I was living back in the hills of Kentucky, and you can imagine that talking about extraterrestrials was far worse than talking about, talking about psychic phenomena, for example. It just, you don't talk about that sort of thing. And seeing UFOs, it's done in hushed whispers. And no one wants to have anything to do with someone who's seen one more than once. So here I am, a kid who is profoundly psychic. The folks would like to know who's going to win this game or that game, you know, who's going to win the Kentucky Derby. My uncle finally acquiesced, and he wanted to know every year. But by and large, no one wanted to know this. And as far as the healing goes, I made the mistake, and it really wasn't a mistake, but, you know, it was not looked at very favorably when the fellow across the way lived on the next farm over. He got off the tractor, and it was muddy, and he slipped and twisted his leg, and he messed up his knee. He couldn't even walk, just hurt terribly. He sat down, and I worked on his knee while I'm only, maybe 14, 15 years old. I just put my hand on his knee and said, "Oh, well, I see what's going on there. Here, I'll just fix it for you." And next thing you know, he's up walking, doesn't hurt. And he looked at me like, you know, not a very nice look, and got away from me as fast as he could. Well, I went around the neighborhood, and it was the talk of the neighborhood. The neighborhood being some farms all separated by each other by a mile or so. So it wasn't really a neighborhood, but the community, I guess. And it wasn't long before people were gossiping about it, and I was warned not to talk about it by the preacher that wanted me to start going to church and love God and so on and so forth. And in order to show me that we were pals, he took me out into the woods to go hunting for squirrels. Well, the squirrels were my friends. I was working on animals before I was ever working on people, and I could easily communicate with birds and squirrels and snakes and deer and whatever. So he wanted me to go out there and kill some squirrels with him. Well, I ended up firing off as many 22 bullets as there were in this rifle that he had me take along. Didn't like guns. I found them to be very, very dangerous and noisy. He got really upset that I'd scared all the squirrels away. And so he complained to my stepdad, who promptly gave me a beating for insulting the preacher. But this was the mentality. You just remain a part of the common denominator. So the healing aspect was something that I had to be very careful with for quite a long time. Even later in life, when I would be away from home, I'd be with this person or that, married to this gal or that gal, and in their families, and it was like, no, we don't want to hear about that stuff. That's crazy stuff. Don't embarrass us by talking about your UFO experiences or your psychic abilities or your healing, because that isn't real anyway, and it'll just embarrass us. No, just focus on your business and your work and do the things you need to do that are supposed to be done. This is how life is lived here. Well, that came to a bit of a crash. And eventually I met Kathy, who was the first person who ever was interested. And she's the reason why I'm out doing what I do now, because she believed in me. And she said, something's very, very different about you. You're supposed to be helping people, not running these businesses. And so I said, fine, let's see what happens. And so here I am. But the quantum aspect,
I value that. I just have to tell you, That's awesome.
She is the most amazing person that I've ever known. She's absolutely amazing to me. Such a good person. And it's because of her that I...
Was she led to you?
Oh, you know, that's quite a story. Yeah.
Okay, share, share.
I'll give you the thumbnail sketch, because this is really, really a bizarre story. But it's all true. I was at the end of an 18-year marriage, and I just felt like I needed to be myself. I was tired of being what I was supposed to be, and I just needed to be me. And I was very unhappy doing everything I was supposed to do, you know, playing by the rules, but I just wasn't happy within myself. I had a company where we took people on tours to Peru, and that was my outlet to get into the spiritual side of things and get away from everything and just get into a whole new world. And that's where I met Rich and the others from the Pleiades. Well, this was a few years after Rich, and I was basically in Peru, and thumbnail sketch is this. There was a shaman, an old man, his name is Pedro. He wanted to read the coca leaves for me while we were at the Waterfall of Dreams. I said, no, just go ahead and read it for the passengers. I've had this done a dozen times, and it really, you know, you don't have to do this. He kept insisting, and finally he read the coca leaves. And during this reading, which was quite involved and had some rather dramatic details, he said, you're going to be divorced in 6 months. You work with electricity. You're going to stop doing that. That business is going to go away. Now, this guy knows nothing about me. And he says, also, you're not from this world. You're supposed to be doing something greater. And there's someone who's waiting for you. Once you make a decision, there's someone who's waiting for you. She has golden hair. And I said, and where is this person at? He says, I don't know. I'm paraphrasing all this, of course. He throws the coca leaves some more. Gets up, walks over to a map of the United States. He's pointing, he says, she's in the heart. She's in the heart. And he starts pointing around the map, and boom, right on Kansas City. In the heart. Well, this guy speaks Aymara. He doesn't know anything about the United States, for one thing. He doesn't speak any English, for another, and doesn't hardly speak any Spanish. He's from the Lake Titicaca region. Found out later this guy was one of the most powerful sorcerers from Lake Titicaca that there were at the time. He was a sorcerer teacher, considered a wizard to his people. Well, anyhow, he goes on to say that, oh, no, no. Well, this is where you meet her, but that's not where she's from. Well, where is she from? And he taps around. He goes, she's from the heart, here. Taps on Lincoln, Nebraska. And I just laughed. I said, there's no way in hell I'm going to go to Lincoln. I don't like Nebraska. And I have no plans to go over here to Kansas City. So, no, that's fun. As it turns out, I got back home and broke up with my wife at the time. And she throws the letters at me that had come in my absence. She says, oh, there's something here for you. So I pick it up off the floor. And there's a plane ticket and my lodging certificate. I'm going to be a speaker in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm flying out. I forgot what the date was. It's like, well, that's weird. And, of course, with all the trauma of, you know, a marriage ending is not easy. I had sort of forgotten about the whole thing with Pedro. I was really caught up in the drama of this whole breakup. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go to Kansas City. That'll be good. Go to Kansas City, and I do my lecture, And I'm starting to remember what Pedro had said, and I'm wondering, huh? I mean, isn't this going to be kind of weird? I'm going to end one marriage and then find somebody else. It's not exactly what I had thought would ever happen. But I've got an open mind, so okay, I hope she's cute. Well, I meet people left and right. Nobody has golden hair. A few are platinum blondes, and most are redheads or brunettes, or some with black hair. And some of those were cute, but they weren't the golden hair girl. Well, I'm at my table afterwards thinking, oh, well, you know, that was just a weird thing, the shaman, you know, all this. I mean, how could that be real anyway? And suddenly this gal walks up to the table saying that her friends who had attended my lecture had suggested she come meet me. She had just gotten there. She'd gotten in late. She couldn't get to my lecture. She walks up, introduces herself as Kathy, and we just shake hands. But the weird thing is that in that moment that our hands touched, there was suddenly nothing. There was just she and I in this complete absence of sound. And it was a busy, noisy place where I was at in this convention center. But there was an absence of sound. There wasn't even anything around us. It was like we were standing in a spotlight in a very large, dark room. And there was this electricity that was running down my arm and through my body as though I had touched an electric fence. It didn't hurt, but it was just jolting me to the very core of my being. I was breathless and speechless. I don't know how long that lasted. Suddenly her hand pulls away and everything returns to normal. She looks a bit frustrated and flustered and says, well, it's nice to meet you. And I said, yeah, it's nice to meet you too. And I've got to go. And so she left. I didn't know at the time that the exact same thing happened to her and just absolutely shook her up. And I didn't know at the time, of course, how could I? But she had a series of encounters with men that weren't all that productive, and she had sworn off ever being in a relationship with a man again until she met me. Well, during the course of the time that I was there, which was a couple of days, we got to know each other. And as she was leaving, I was a little sad. She was leaving with her friends. She was distracted and her finger got pinched in the car door. Made a big old blood blister on her finger. And she's like, oh my God, this hurts so bad. And couldn't believe it had happened. She probably felt silly. Here she was having this clumsy moment in front of me. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Let me see it. And I said, you know what? By the time you get home, this will just be gone. Well, that's impossible because blood blisters last for days, if not weeks. And it hurt, but then it stopped hurting. And by the time she got home, there was no blood blister. She was intrigued and she wanted to know more, and we began a friendship that lasted from that point until now. And from that time until now, it's just been one long conversation that sometimes repeats itself, but most often it is always new and unique and interesting for both of us. And that's how we met. And that's how it happened.
I could tell by the video that she appreciates your authenticity. And I could see where you were shining and becoming more of who you're supposed to be because somebody valued your authenticity. And I could see that even on your travels when you were going to travel and going to new discoveries. And then there it is again. You guys are always confronting that new discovery again and having confidence to go into those new arenas. And I thought that was really great that you guys do that together.
Yeah, well, it's like traveling with your best friend. And she's really very smart. her insight is really what propels our expeditions and our exploration. You know, a lot of people give me all the credit because I'm out there in front of the camera or I'm out there the figure, you know. But the reality is I wouldn't be there at all if it wasn't for her. And her research is what propelled us to whatever location we happened to go to. The information she pulled together is the information that I'm basically parroting, that she told me, and then I looked into it, I understood it, so I could talk about it. But all the credit goes to Kathy.
That's phenomenal. That's very, very encouraging for other people. That because so many people have gone through, like, your divorce because you find that you want to be your authentic self now, and whoever your partner is at the time won't allow you to do that. They want you to stay in your box. And so part of finding yourself is giving yourself permission to break free of those constraints and knowing that somebody's on the other side that's going to value you being authentic.
Well, you know what happened, and this is what I've seen. With all of my experiences, you have your situation where you're with another person, for example, as it was with me. We got a divorce. And friends fell away. They didn't agree with what I was doing. Business associates fell away. People, if you start becoming who you truly are, is the message. When you start becoming who you truly are, and you're going to be experimenting to figure that out, but as you start discovering this, you start living it. And as you're living it, the people who are insecure, because their reality depended upon you being this or that, they are going to fall away. And it's going to feel a little uncomfortable, maybe even hurtful. I thought they were my friend. Why are they just not talking to me anymore? Because I got a divorce? Because now I'm showing some interest in UFOs or psychic phenomena, or this is how I see myself, and I don't get it. Well, the truth is, when you are who you truly are, these people are going to fall away. But the magic is that they are going to be replaced by people who think that you are really amazing, that you're very special, who appreciate and respect you. And before you know it, you'll be surrounded by people who love and appreciate you like you've never had before. And they will further empower you to find all of those little pieces of yourself that you've been trying to locate for so long, because you'll find it within them. Because just like them, we're all trying to figure out, what is the best version of me? Who am I? And eventually you'll come to a conclusion of who you are, and you'll start living that. And when you do, your light is going to shine very, very brightly. As this light shines more and more brightly from you, and using light in a metaphoric sense, the energy coming off of you is more confident, more pure. The essence of you is just shining through. That light is not meant to enlighten others. It's to give them evidence they can find it within themselves to also do this. And it gives them permission, because people need permission. Strange as it sounds, the way that we're manipulated in this society, having permission is a big deal. And if they can see that you're doing it and you're happy, it gives them permission to do it as well, and they can be happy. And that's what the light coming off of you is all about. It's basically, you can't tell anything about it from your end, but it's lighting up the path so that others can find their way. That's how I see it.
I saw that in the video. Well, I can hear me in the background.
Sorry.
The Phoenix Lights, did you have anything to do with that?
No, I didn't. I was told by Rich that it was going to happen. I just didn't know when it was going to happen. He just said that they were going to be coming through. Apparently, that craft, whatever it was, quite large, it was doing a geophysical survey and started, really started down quite a ways south. I don't really know how far south. I know it was Mexico was one of the locations, but it was going north and south, and I don't know in what particular order, but it was doing a survey of the Earth, because all along the path it was taken, that it had been taking, is also an area that has been replenished with all kinds of Earth upheavals and volcanoes. So how all that plays into things and what it all really means, I couldn't say. But I was told it was coming through, and when it came through, I was just really, you know, kicking myself that I missed it. So at the time that it was happening in Phoenix, I was playing music in rehearsal with the band I used to be in called UFO, U-F-A-U-X. So we just all missed it. It was a pretty big deal, though. And after it had happened, there were, I guess, I don't know what the ships were, but there were these, like I mentioned earlier in the interview, these balls of light, basically. And we would see those around for a while. Not for a long while, but for a short while, you know, a few weeks after the first event.
Can you give me your perspective on the chemtrails? Because I keep getting this intuition that there's more to them than what we think. It's not just about hiding the sun or whatever weather wars. There's something else going on. Can you contribute to that?
Yeah, I wish I could. I don't know what that's all about. I don't like the idea that it's happening. And from the things that I've read and the people I've discussed this with who seem to be in the know, I mean, these are scientists and so forth that have analyzed some of the materials that have fallen to the Earth. It doesn't seem to be a very good thing. And it seems to me that if it was a good thing, then there wouldn't be any issue in saying, well, here's what it is and here's why we're doing it. But instead, there's complete denial that it's even occurring, which is so counterintuitive. I mean, how could you deny it's actually happening, that there isn't any such thing as that, when you look up and there it is? So, no, I don't really have anything to offer about this. I wish I did. I wish I knew more about it. But I don't.
What would you like to leave my audience with?
I would like to tell the folks listening that the reality of who you are is much more than what you've ever suspected. Even if you've suspected that you have the particles of God within you, you're much more than that. But in order to find it, you're going to need to like yourself first. You're going to need to see beyond all of the flaws that people have pointed out to you, all the things that you find disparaging about yourself, whether it's how you look, how you sound, whether you can sing or not, whether you have any talents that you know of. None of these things matter. Try to see yourself as I see you, which is one image of God, perfect and whole, that is a radiant, shining being that has complete potential that's waiting to be released. If you want to find out who you really are, start looking in a mirror, but see beyond what you see there in the physical reflection. Try to find out who you are and then be it. A lot of people are trying to be this or they want to be that. I've had a lot of folks say, oh, well, I'm trying to be a healer, or I'm trying to be a psychic, and it just isn't working. Well, the reason is because you're trying to be. If you have this aspiration, you have this notion that you could be this or that, then live as though you are, and have confidence in the way that you're living. It isn't easy at first, but you can do it. Stop trying to be something and be it. Live as though you are. I think that's probably the most valuable piece of information I could share with those who are listening. Because it's when you start living as though you are this or that, you will become what you think you are. But you will certainly live who you are when you know who you are. And to know who you are is just to do the things that whatever your notion suggests that you want to be, just start doing this. Live it. Stop trying to be it. Because you'll never get there if you keep trying. You have to do it. Make sense?
Very wise. Where can people find you?
Well, a number of places. They can find me at jerrywills.com, of course. That's the website for the healing. The other is at expeditions.tv. That's spelled with an X. It's expeditions.tv. That's where we look for lost cities and such. And the other is brand new. The other is a band called Terra Anomaly that I think is going to make a big splash in the world. It's spelled TERRANOMALY, terranomaly.com. It's about the music. And, of course, my radio show is broadcast on Friday nights from 7 to 10 Eastern, and that's at jerrywillsshow.com. Can find me there.
Thank you so much for your time. I'll also post all that on evh.club too, so people can go and find you. But thank you so much, you and Kathy, for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us. I really appreciate you.
Well, it's been a real privilege to be your guest this evening. Thank you for having me on. I really do appreciate being asked.
Wow. You have such a great attitude and such a wonderful story. I mean, it's just amazing. I'm so glad so that other people that are having similar experiences, they don't feel weird. They don't feel out of place. They have a home. And thank you for giving that to them. I really value that.
You know, one thing that you might not be aware of is that there is something brand new. It's called UFO Social. I don't have anything to do with this, but it's for experiencers. Be worth looking into, I think. It's the web address is ufosocial.yooco.org. I can email that to you if you'd like. I've been looking into it. I have interviewed the fellow who has started it. His story is absolutely over the top insane. It's just one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard, I think. And he started this website for people like himself. So it might be worth your listeners, if they're interested in that sort of thing, to check that out. It's free, and it's a very interesting place to meet up.
Thank you for that. I will. I'll look it up and I'll link to it on my site, too. That's great. Thank you. And we'll be in touch. I'm only a couple hours from you, so we'll be in touch. Thanks again.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye. Okay, everybody, there's a show. We went a little bit longer than normal, but it was well worth it. You can catch, if you missed the last half, because it was just recorded, you can catch it on YouTube. We'll be putting it up probably in the next few days. So thank you, and have a great week, and I'll see you next week. Robert Morningstar is going to be on. That's going to be a great show, too. So see you then. Thank you.